I can't believe it. A real gourmet kitchen and I get to watch.
You've read my book. Let us see how much you know, huh? Which one is a chef?
That guy.
Very good. Who is next in command?
The sous chef there. The sous is responsible for the kitchen when the chef's not around.
Mm.
Saucier, in charge of sauces, very important. Chef de partie, demi-chef de partie, both important. Commis, they're cooks, very important.
Ah, you are a clever rat. Now, who is that?
Oh, him? He's nobody.
Not nobody. He is part of the kitchen.
He's a plongeur or something. He washes dishes or takes out the garbage. He doesn't cook.
He could.
No.
How do you know? What do I always say? Anyone can cook.
Well, yeah, anyone can. That doesn't mean that anyone should.
Well, that is not stopping him.
Talk Shoe. Recorded live.
See?
What? What is he doing? No! No! No, this is terrible! He's ruining the soup! And nobody's noticing it! It's your restaurant! Do something!
What can I do? I am a figment of your imagination.
But he's ruining the soup! We gotta tell someone that he's there!
Hey everyone, welcome out to the good, the bad, and the geeky. I'm Nick Nitro, your host with most, and with me tonight is...
Oh, dog.
Oh, son of a bitch. For those
look
who don't
the
know,
Nitro
dog. That's horrible. That's even worse. One of the for those who don't know, this is actually my father, Dave, or DJ Og Dog.
DJ Og Dog. We'll go with that.
We'll go with that. I guess retrospectively, it is better than Father Nitro. But anyway, Jimmy has been busy. Nathan has been busy. I've been equally busy. Actually, this is sort of also a weird kind of test on this new equipment that we got. Tonight's episode is called the bullshit episode because pretty much it's just us sitting around bullshit and there's really no rhyme or reason to the show. Or we're not on a strict schedule as we normally are under the tight rule of Iron Fisted Jimmy. I'm sorry.
I'll go with that.
It's like we're gonna do this on the show tonight. We gotta keep it under 4 minutes though when we talk about that. And then the fucker goes off for like 5 minutes on fucking Grey's Anatomy. Anyway,
we'll honor Jimmy. By talking about Barbara Streisand for
you. Okay, we're gonna do some news. We're not gonna do a lot, but we'll do some news. But pretty much yeah. So you know we might even go off topic and do whatever. So, just bear with us. It'll be a lot of fun. Jimmy will come back. If we get to a point where it just becomes really too busy, the format of the show will remain the same usually if it's me and Jimmy and Nathan or me and Jimmy. But if I find that everyone's getting a little bit too busy, I'll see if DJ Og Dog here would like to help out. If he is too busy, then we'll just do a good, the bad, and the geeky quickie, which is I just get on and do some news and whatever. So that way we do a show every week and you know you guys who actually spent the probably five minutes to find a gig that find the podcast, subscribe to it, you know it's worth your time. So anyway, if you have a comment, goodbadgeeky@gmail.com, and so let's get rolling. The first news, I guess, and he sort of pointed this out right before we start, was the Joe Siegel died at the age of 63, and what little picadillies did he ever give us in terms of quotes? It's like something really weird, like Finding Nemo lost, or Finding Nemo. Nemo was lost. Well, Nemo has been found in the hearts of audiences everywhere. It's stupid little stuff like that. But he was overall mostly known as a good guy. He co-created, I think, Gilda Radner's charity with Gene Wilder for the Cancer Society. But the thing he's most recently known for, which he asked me about, and that's sort of why we're bringing up, is the whole Clerks 2 thing. Apparently halfway through the movie of Clerks 2, Joel Siegel just stood up, and instead of walking out, he apparently had to make everyone know in the audience. He's like, I have never walked out of a goddamn movie for 34 fucking years. but I'm walking out today. And he made sure that he actually cussed, which if you know Joel Siegel, if you're just, whoa, no. So, but anyway, yeah. And the whole thing is that Kevin Smith just found that really rude. He goes, you know what? If you're going to bash my movie, you're right. You're getting paid to, you know, that's cool.
The, yeah, I guess he wanted to bash it in the newspapers and not...
Yeah, he wanted to... Well, yeah, because people are watching it. Because, like, his whole point was, is like, it's like, if you directed a movie and I'm the critic and we're, like, in a huge crowd of other critics, it's like I get up and just say, hey, you other fuckers out there, this movie sucks. I've never walked out of a movie for 34 years, but I am tonight, and screw you all, you know, that sort of thing. So that's pretty much what happened with that.
Maybe he had to pay to go see it.
You know what it was? They never got up to, for those who don't know, there's a donkey show in Clerks 2. It's actually one of the funniest bits in the film, but it was the talking of the donkey show that he walked out on. Just the part where he's just like, Kinky Kelly, sexy donkey rides, da-da-da-da-da. And she takes, and Kinky Kelly takes it all. Apparently that, in his mind, just went, raunchiest thing I've ever seen. God forbid, you know, I remember Bachelor Party with Tom Hanks back in the 80s. Donkey Show was in that. And other, probably sicker films, you know. But anyway, I digress. So, Joel Siegel, though, will be missed. He did some good things.
He probably had a reputation for ABC. He wanted to keep it on the up and up. I guess. I don't know.
Oh, why? Because, you said ABC?
Yeah.
Well, okay, that
started out WABC and then went to...
Well, that would make sense because the Weinsteins used to work for Disney under Miramax, who owns ABC, Walt Disney. Joel Siegel was taken in. Weinstein Company bought Clerks 2, or distributed Clerks 2. So now we see the real reasoning behind everything.
Yeah.
Well. So, there you go. There you go. Moving along, if those who have not heard this, we're sort of catching the tail end of it, but apparently there's a new movie directed by Bryan Singer coming out. Eddie Izzard's in it and a few other famous actors. But it's about the assassination plot against Hitler from within the Nazi party. I believe Tom Cruise is supposed to play Colonel Klaus von Stauffenberg. I probably horribly butchered that name, so I apologize. For those Nazi enthusiasts out there, all zero of you that listen to the show. But apparently, you know, a lot of Germans got really pissed off, or some small groups were getting pissed off, banning Tom Cruise and the movie shooting there because Tom Cruise is a Scientologist, and apparently Scientologists is a fake religion. Aliens landing on the Earth and colonizing the world with humans. I never thought that as being totally freaking fake.
It sort of amazed me that I always thought that they didn't believe in the capital punishment and all that kind of stuff in Germany. I'm sitting there thinking, they're not going to let him in because he was a Scientologist. They said,
yeah.
What'd they do with the Lutherans?
So, I don't know. earlier, too, you're like, what if he was Lutheran? Well, they consider that a real religion. It's like, do they?
I don't know.
Oh. But anyway, the movie's called Valkyrie, and pretty much Cruz would be the character who, you know, puts the satchel bomb that actually did, it was able to hurt Hitler. So, but the thing is that the defense ministry said that, you know, well, we actually own the land. You can shoot here. So it's just like, well, wait a minute. What was the point of all this brouhaha? Is it supposed to... Well, there were reports earlier in the week, too, but it quickly died down after this news hit that...
It says something about the finance ministry is the one that's going to have to okay it. So the defense ministry backed down.
Well, right.
And they said, yeah, well, we'll leave it up to the finance ministry. Well, they'll get money for it. I don't see why they would turn it down.
Tom Cruise, who owns a lot of money, paying the German government or getting upset about a time when their country made a complete ass out of themselves by committing mass genocide of the Jews. I don't know what it's going to be, but I think I'm going to choose the money. But that's, you know, I'm making a judgment call there.
17 years after he was born, too. Actually.
God. So okay, and I literally just found this tonight, and I didn't know this. It's some of a superhero comic book news, but as of 2 weeks ago, Imagi Entertainment, the people who made the Ninja Turtle movie, informed Mirage Studios, the guys who own the property, there was a 50-50 chance of doing another CGI film sequel. And then last week, they upped the odds to 70-30 in the favor of a sequel, as in talks between Imagi and their distributed partners, Warner Brothers and the Weinstein Group, seem to be heading in a positive direction. And overall, the first film raked around $92 million worldwide, $54 domestic, around $38 million overseas, yet the film only cost $34 million to make, which by CGI standards, pretty darn good. The film, it's sort of like Clerks 2. Everyone gave Clerks 2 a lot of shit for the film bombing at the box office, but the film only cost $5 million to make, and so maybe at the most $6 million including advertising, and the film raked in way over that. But everyone said, because, well, you weren't number one or number five in the box office. You guys dropped off of the top five within like 2 weeks. You're a bomb. And it's sort of changing the way everything's going, which we'll probably get into here a little bit further more in a bit. But if you have any comments, questions, you know, sort of offended by anything I've said, goodbadgeeky at gmail.com. You miss Jimmy and his very gay-sounding voice. You can write us that too. And we'll be right back right after this. Les rêves des amoureux sont comme le bon vin. Ils donnent de la joie ou bien du chagrin. Affaibli par la faim, je suis malheureux. Pas longtemps chemin, tout ce que je peux. Car rien n'est gratuit dans la vie. L'espoir est un plat bien trop vite consommé. À sauter les repas, je suis habituée. Un voleur solitaire et triste à nourrir. Je suis amer, je ne peux réussir. Car rien n'est gratuit dans la vie. Je perds, on ne me dira. Back. I don't really know what we played just there, but it was probably something from Ratatouille. I'll work it out. Anyway, Good, the Bad, and the Geeky, the show that revolutionizes the way we record things and know what we're doing. Pretty much, the movies we're going to do tonight, we've seen all in order. Or the way we're reviewing them, we're doing them right in order. As my father looks over to look at the list to see what exactly we've seen in order.
Well, I didn't know what we were talking about.
But pretty much we're doing reviews, and we're not going to do Pirates of the Caribbean because me and Jimmy already talked about that. He really loved the movie, thought it was the best out of all the films. I thought it was boring. Jack Sparrow appears boring. I mean, and when I say boring, I mean it's entertaining to know, find out how the story is going to end. That's what I mean when I say, oh, your computer signed off.
Well, wouldn't you know it?
Right when we're recording. Hot damn. But no, it became an issue where I thought the whole movie was pretty much boring. It was good to watch one time, but I don't want to ever watch it again, and I ended up having to watch it again. Anyway, point is, Jimmy really loved it. I just don't really want to see it again. And I really don't want to get it on DVD, but being a completist, I will have to, because I own the first two. But so we're not going to talk about that. And
oh, I was hoping I'd get to say one thing.
What do you want to say?
Jack Sparrow got exactly what he was supposed to get. He started the movie without the ship, and he ended the movie without the ship.
Yeah, that's true.
Got his just desserts.
Yes. Well, he did get the peanut, though.
I guess.
But
was a good out-of-the-box experience to see how he handled death.
Yeah. Well, that's...
He was talking to himself quite a bit, but that's how he did it.
Because he's nuts, too.
Because he was crazy. But
The first movie we're going to talk about is... Now, I did know Jimmy saw this, and he thought it was really good, but beyond that, I don't really know. But it was Ocean's 13, and the first question is, does it live up to the original one with the cast? And obviously, no. But what were your thoughts, sir?
What are my thoughts? It lived up to the... They put another spin on how it was supposed to... How they were going to win out in the end, and defeat, you know, and actually
whoever
took the guy's money, and destroyed his reputation because they did nothing but 5-star casinos,
and now he doesn't have one.
And all during it all, just like they did in the first one, they kept you unaware. There were certain things that they were leaving clues, but you didn't know what it meant. You thought it was clues to failure, where it was...
Well, it's not like the second one where he actually shows them failing horribly, and you're really just going like, really? Come on, man. These guys can't fail. Or at least if they do fail, you want them to win fair and square. Like, the second film felt like a huge cheat. Like, you watch the whole movie, they fail. Because the first movie, it does feel like they're failing, but... It was so snappy and whatnot, it didn't feel like it was a failure. Like, it was just kick-ass. And the second one was, like, they all go to jail, but, like, that was the plan the entire... No, that's horrible. Like, I don't...
Well, I think they were looking at it from the international point of view.
Well,
That's why they
But
had
they didn't
to all
really
get
use,
arrested.
They didn't really use the whole idea, though, at the same time that... They didn't use locales. As much as I thought they should have. Because that's the whole thing about that. I think that's why they went back to Vegas. Because Vegas is freaking awesome. You have all these landmarks. Glitzy glamour. Everyone likes to gamble. You know, be their raunchiest or whatever. Because they're in Vegas. What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. And you have these really cool badass guys. They're thieves. And they try to rob casinos. The place that people can't beat. But the Ocean's 12 should have been so much better than that. And the bad guy they have, he was an interesting... I mean, he shows up in Ocean's 13. And you see... Well, I caught him all throughout the movie. I don't think you... You didn't really like this, the second one, Ocean's 12.
So no,
I
don't, not really.
So, like, because I would lean over and I was like, hey, man, that's the guy from the second movie. Who?
Well, I saw him, but I thought he was in on it.
No, he's not the 13th member. Actually, Eddie Izzard was the 13th member. And Terry Benedict.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, best part of the movie was Terry Benedict on Oprah. All right, don't want to ruin it too much, but it involves the question: why did you give all that money to all those little kids? Well, Oprah, I took a look at their small faces and I cried. Oprah is like a running gag throughout the movie. You begin to realize, which is fine because George Clooney and Oprah apparently. Or, you know, very good friends, I guess. I don't know.
He was more into the revenge factor anyway. I don't know.
Who Benedict?
Say what you want. Yeah, you can say what you want, but he was...
No,
he was
yeah.
Revenge.
Well, that's...
And I think he got it, so that's
well, in a way, yeah. Well, or did he? You don't know. Or those who saw the movie know, but we don't want to ruin it for you.
Oh, okay.
Well, I know. Ocean's 13 is one of those films where, like, it's a caper film. It's like The Sixth Sense. You don't want to ruin it. It's not like Silver Surfer, where it's like, it's a superhero movie. Whoever the bad guy is, if it's apparently Silver Surfer or if he's working for someone else, the bad guy probably is going to get stopped. Granted, it is the second film in a possible trilogy, so very bad things could happen, which it almost did, but it didn't. I'm referring to like the whole Empire Strikes Back phenomena that hit after a while, which is bad things happen always in the second movie. You know, like Luke gets his hand cut off, finds out Vader's his father, you know. It's a series of down notes, a series of down endings, just like life. But anyway, the next movie we saw was Rise of the Silver Surfer, Fantastic Four 2 for some of those challenged on sequel movies this summer. And I gotta say, most pleasant surprise of the summer. That's... I hated the first movie.
Everybody, I think, probably have to agree they hated the movie. One thing that I've learned, or not learned, or observed about some of these Marvel
superhero
movies is that you've got to take it from the print and put it on the screen, and like they did with Spider-Man, it was acceptable. He didn't make his own web; he has it in, you know, it's innate or it's in his body. But what they did with the Fantastic Four in the first one was just absolutely...
Well, and all they did was
just absolutely... They tried to put Victor Von Doom, instill in him all that kind of stuff, and it was... it was just unacceptable.
Well, they ripped off their own movie.
And it was terrible. It was just a terrible plot.
They ripped off their own movie.
Well,
I mean, okay, like the entire boardroom scene of Victor Von Doom getting ousted by the other board members, it's like, we're tired of trying. Let's just rip off Spider-Man. Because that was 3 years ago, not five.
For those of you that don't know who Victor was, he was the ruler of his own country.
In the comic. Let's specify that.
In the comic. But he was also, it went with it with a financial empire. And he was smart enough that he was going to have a financial empire, keep his country solvent. Well, he ended up getting kicked out of the board of directors. So I mean, I didn't have a problem with that, and his face got so scarred
during an accident that was or was not possibly caused by Reed Richards, right?
Yeah,
and that's why he hates him, and also he's very arrogant, which he is sort of in the movie, but it's sort of a different kind of arrogance that doesn't really lead to what the original character was. And so that's why he wears the mask. And then the mask at one point does get actually physically melted onto his skin. Well, in this version, he's from Lavateria, we guess. We don't really know. But apparently they donated a really ugly-looking Iron Man-like, you know, man behind the Iron Mask to Victor Von Doom. Because apparently when I think of giving something nice to somebody, I think of an ugly fucking mask that would, you know, mortify even a... Iron Man could sue him in that, you know, looking at that mask, going, why are you ripping off my face? I mean, that's the only thing I can think of, but I'm joking, but really, that's the whole guise of how the mask came to Victor Von Doom, the Fantastic Four movie. It was donated by Lavateria for whatever good deed or donating money that he did. And you're just like, what? That's it? He's not actually living in Lavateria or ruling Lavateria or something else that involves Lavateria? And then after that, it's just... And then you realize that Victor Von Doom apparently planned the entire thing. Like,
but let us not ramble too far into the past. Let's get with the future.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Well, I can't say, though. Every time it's on HBO, I don't weep as much as I do when I watch it. Because I am sort of drawn to watching it again, and I don't know why.
Oh, I couldn't watch it again.
Well, I it's never...
If it's on, I'm not going to watch it. But the thing that amazes me, the second one has a great plot.
Way to turn that back around. Very good
and
job.
It's a great story, and I just couldn't believe that they put out a second one like that, and the first one was just so wanting.
The first 5 minutes were a little bit... They were almost too campy. Well, the problem is like the whole film in some ways is a little campy, because at least between Sue and Reed, I thought some of her responses were just really campy, and then right when they have this huge dance number at the beginning of the movie, which is the bachelor party, things begin to like you're like, oh, this is the tone of the movie, and it took some of the best parts of the first movie. Were the interaction between Johnny Storm, the Human Torch, the Fire Guy, and the Big Stone Guy, which is the Thing, which is Ben Grimm. That was the thing they nailed dead on in the first movie, was their interaction with each other and the way they really treated each other and cared about each other, but never really, you know, acted on it. The second film, it's like they included the actual dynamic that Reed and Sue have, and then the rest of the group dynamic. Because they already have their powers, they can start dicking around with each other. And like when Sue gets Johnny's powers, that was hilarious. It's like, what's wrong? I'm on fire. You're on fire. Duh. But I thought it was really good.
I always felt that in the comics that Reed would only use his powers last. He'd rather use his brain first. And he was always about the work rather than
that. Well, they did
having fun, and they sort of showed that in this movie. But the point of it is, he did let go, which.
Well, if he does, well, that's the thing too.
He got in trouble, but you know, that's for you.
If he does let go, or if he ever does whatever, it always comes back to bite him. Like in the case that on his bachelor party, Sue walks in on him dancing with a bunch of hot girls, and
even though he was in the middle of having fun, he was trying to do what was supposed to be proper for getting ready for a wedding, and
which is not going to a bachelor party with hot girls dancing.
And then he was asked to do some work, and he said no, but he didn't do it.
But that's in character though.
But that's his character,
right?
He saw an interesting problem, and he figured he could figure it out, and still plan a wedding. And
right. And the other interesting thing is that now this character, you don't remember the character, but he's called the Super Skrull. There's it's the shapeshifter race of aliens. One of the bad guys, the Super Skrull, actually somehow tried to morph into all the different characters of the Fantastic Four, and he got stuck with all their powers. So like he had the hands of the Thing, he could fly around like Johnny Storm, or could ignite his body in fire, or turn invisible, or he could stretch his body out. So he was quite a very. And one of the subplots is that, you know, they sort of showed it in the trailer. They don't really show you what he's attacking, and I wouldn't want to ruin that, because that's the thing. That's the other thing I liked about this movie. Out of all the movies in recent years, this movie did not really go into it. They just like, oh, Silver Surfer. That's the movie. Silver Surfer really isn't. I mean, he's sort of the focal point, but there's a lot of other shit going around that they never once mention. They never show one of the big chase sequences at the end of the movie. They never showed it once, except for a few shots of, like, you know, the Fantastic Four. But you don't see who they're fighting. And it's not the Silver Surfer. So who is it? That's for you to find out and watch the movie. That's what I'm saying. It really is a great movie, I thought. Writing was, you know, really it was funny. And Silver Surfer was actually a really well done. I mean,
yeah.
I don't know. Did he always come off like a very, like, I mean, when I started reading in the 90s, everyone knew who the Surfer was, and he knew who everybody else was. So he was more like, hey, how you doing? You know, and I do remember, like, reading back in the old days, he was a very quiet individual, and, like, you know.
He didn't have much to say.
Well, I mean, and also, he was a very hurt soul in the comics.
He was talking to himself, though, in the comics.
Well, all characters talk to themselves. I mean, Spider-Man was probably the biggest example of that, and Daredevil, because, well, Spider-Man was more witty banter, like, oh, I gotta do this for Aunt May, I gotta do this for Uncle Ben, and da-da-da. Daredevil was more like he was a lawyer, so he was trying to analyze everything. I mean, that was the bane of this comics, though, back then, wasn't it? Like, all the characters thought to themselves, and...
Yeah, but...
Or, I don't know. I just, 90s, that unless it was Spider-Man, by that point when I started reading, that was sort of moved away. But... Each you know, each generation is different. I know you didn't like some things with Daredevil because it was from my generation, not yours. But anyway, Silver Surfer, what 9 out of 10? What would you say?
Oh, at least a 9 or 8.
9 or 8.
Yeah.
I would say 8 or 9. Too. I mean, I would probably lean more towards 8 because there were a few things
stars.
That irked me.
I know that nobody's ever going to give that thing above 3 stars, but I'd give it a 4. You had a 5-star rating system.
Well, it felt like
it
an
was
actual
a strong 3, but I think it was 4 at least.
Well, it felt like an actual comic book movie, which a lot of movies, like Spider-Man and The Dark Knight, for example, or Batman Begins, those are movies based after comic books. And there are some movies that are comic book movies that they fail, and there are others that work. This is actually the only one I've actually seen that actually sort of, I mean, I think Daredevil falls along more of that line, where it's a comic book movie that I thought worked. I mean, probably all of you disagree with me. I don't care. But I liked it. I thought it was cool. Actually, I like the director's cut better. I think director's cut is... it's not all about Jennifer Garner. But anyway, so yeah, Silver Surfer, good movie. Ocean's 13, good movie. And then you actually got me. You wanted to see this. Usually I'm the one who goes, "Hey man, if I don't see a movie with Jimmy or my friends or myself, I always try to get my dad to go." And he was actually, I've been sort of, it looks cool. I'll eventually see it. But he's like, "Hey, let's go see Die Hard." Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker, let's go. So we went, and it was a great movie.
I'm trying to remember if I saw the other. This is the fourth one, or the
this
third
is
one?
Fourth one.
Fourth one. I don't remember. I know I didn't see the second one on the big screen, but I think I saw the first one.
You saw the first one on the big screen?
I think. I'm trying to.
I don't. Well, I was young, so was that a date night or something with you and mom?
Might have been.
Let's go see Bruce Willis blow some shit up in the.
But anyway, I didn't get to see the other ones on the big screen. And I'm telling you, it was worth going to see it on the big screen.
And looking back, I would have loved to see Die Hard with a Vengeance. Because I remember you sort of wanted to see that, and I was like, "But it's Die Hard." But I was young and stupid back then. I didn't. Which ironically, Die Hard with a Vengeance is my favorite Die Hard movie. But I mean, this actually is my second favorite, because everyone will probably get mad at me for saying this, but while the first movie is obviously the classic, the villain isn't as intense or, I think, hands-on as... And also, Samuel Jackson is a badass, but...
Yeah.
But yeah, so they sort of take the same formula.
He evolved, and he still evolved. He got old. He's older.
Yeah.
And of course, his family got older. And the thing that sort of amazed me, his son was completely out of the picture. Didn't he have a son and a daughter?
I thought he just had a daughter.
Well, maybe it was. I thought there was two kids. But
I thought he just had a... That, now, at one point...
We'll have to go back and look at the...
Yeah, you're right.
At the first episode. But anyway, the daughter was the only one in the picture.
Well, at one point, the boy was supposed to be his son. And because they couldn't... Because that's why McClane was actually originally asked to take him on. Originally, that's what the plot was. And then Lucy does... His daughter does get kidnapped. Which, of course, that's the last half of the movie. But for better, they changed that. So thank God they added the Matt kid in, and it all went well.
But by this time, the thing got me. I think the big plus I thought was that he had grown as an individual, knowing that bad shit's going to happen to him. And
oh well,
he mentions it slightly, but he doesn't keep ragging like in the first one. He kept ragging about, complaining about it.
Yeah, well, in terms of picky shit, that in terms of comparatively to the other sequels, the only thing that really bothered me, well, okay, for me, the minor thing that sort of bothered me, that it's PG-13. A lot of people were pissed about this. All your Die Hard movies, it's Die Hard, not sort of jump around sort of hard. It's Die Hard, blood, F-bombs, the whole works, explosions, and all kinds of crazy shit going down in front of John McClane. There was a lot of explosions, a lot of badassery going on. One of my favorite quotes, I can't quit quoting, is, "I'm really tired of this kung fu shit," which, in today's marketplace, so fucking hilarious. But there's none of that. There's no blood splatter. There was a few times I really would have liked a little bit more blood splatter. I know that sounds so weird. I'm not trying to sound gross, but it's Die Hard, and so you're just like, "Oh, come on, there's some blood splat." Not even like a little flick of a drop or something. There's none of that. It's like...
Yeah.
So, but besides that, though, they said for a PG-13 movie, though, they kept all the same shit they would have done in other Die Hard movies. They just took out the gore and the blood.
Yeah.
And they took out the F-bombs, which, honestly...
Well, he had blood on his face.
No, he did. He did. But, like, when that guy went into the... When one of the guys goes into a wood chipper-like device or something, a fan or something, you even know you're going, "Oh... There was some," but you're just like, "Oh, come on. There's more blood than that in the human body."
It never stopped. When the guy hit it, it never stopped. It kept on.
That
should have been a little more gory.
Okay, but that's actually my only minor gripe. The only thing that really bugged me comparatively to the other films was he never once said, "I really have a bad headache," which I guess could sort of lead into the whole thing where he goes, "I'm having a bad day." You know what I mean? But at the same time, it's like,
where I thought he grew, see? He just...
Yeah, but you can still say, it's like, "I have a real bad headache."
He knew this stuff was going to happen, and there was no sense for him to be agitated about it. You're just going to take it and try.
Yeah, but you can still sit there and say that, you know, it's like, I'm having a real bad day. Do you have some aspirin? Or just something like that. He doesn't have to say, I'm having a real bad fucking day. It's like, why does all this shit happen to me? You know, that's, and see, I agree with you. I mean, there was some development there, but that's my, what are you doing?
I'm just looking for something. I'm just.
But he's like, look, he's like, I'm talking over there. I just glance over, and he's looking over. And I'm like, well, wait a minute.
I was looking for my phone to see if I.
This is a microphone. This is my shirt. Okay. That's a table. He's like moving his hand, like touching things. Like he's searching for something. Like, if I touch it.
My cell phone. I'm trying to figure out where it went.
Okay. I'm just.
All
right. Running. So, but Die Hard. Okay. Do you want to do the numbers thing or do you want to do stars?
What do you mean?
Rating wise.
When you go to 1 to 10, you're not gonna.
You're giving more range to actually judge the film.
It's an 8, so that's 8. Like a 4. You know, but okay. Your critics are never going to give out above a 3.
Comparatively to the other films, how do you rate it?
Oh, it's got to be. To me, it's probably the top one.
Really,
I think it's better than the.
Better than the third one.
Better than the third one.
Fair enough. That's actually my, for me, it's Die Hard with a Vengeance, Live Free or Die Hard. And see, there's some times where I really in my mind think that it's better, but actually the only reason why it's not better is because Jeremy Irons is just a great bad guy. But besides that, and Samuel L. Jackson, but they have the Mac kid. The kid who plays the Mac.
Yeah, that's what, I couldn't figure out who it was until Nick enlightened me. He said, that's the Mac kid. I'm going, my gosh. You like him. You just automatically like him. And
well, yeah, he has a very, he's very goofy at times, and he's very likable.
But he's amazed at what, you know, John McClane was doing. That's what got me.
You took a car, you used the car as a bullet against the helicopter. I know, kid. I just did it.
I ran out of bullets.
I ran out of bullets. You just hit that car and knocked that guy off. I know, I just did that. I'm tired of this kung fu shit, but yeah, I would rate it probably a 7 or an 8.
I don't know how a lot of people feel, but you can't put any of those above the first one because his personality was actually formed in the first one.
Yeah,
and what happened with the writing in two? It was pretty bad. It was just weak. But the point of it is, I mean, it.
It's a block. Well, they were trying to capitalize on it.
They were trying to capitalize on it, and I think they probably could have done a little better than what they did. But when you're dealing I don't mean to badmouth the military, but sometimes when you get with the military, they do some pretty stupid things at times. And when you're doing it for money rather than do it for a country, sometimes that just makes you look like an idiot.
Well, something else too to note is that this movie and Die Hard 3, they were not Die Hard films. They were films that started off as something else, and that Fox realized, well, hey, we could make this a Die Hard movie. Because the original film for Die Hard with a Vengeance was originally called Simon Says, because that's the whole point. This guy named Simon goes around with bombs, right. And this one was called Fire Sale. That's why at the beginning of the movie, and it was based on a magazine article. That's why at the beginning of the movie it says, based after a computer article by da 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 called Fire Sale. Right. But yeah, it's a good movie. Check it out. Rise of Silver Surfer, good movie. Check it out. Ocean's 13, good movie. Check it out. Considering after how the summer has been sort of blah, you know, considering that's really cool. The one I've really enjoyed so far is Ratatouille. I'm Brad Bird nut. I remember when I was when Iron Giant came out, I began to know my best friend Nathan Trimmer, and he kept saying, "Oh, the Iron Giant's great," and I'm just like, "It looks stupid." But as I would learn later on, being an animation fan, I would go back and look up stuff that I watch now, and Iron Giant was marketed horribly, and I'm a testament to that because I had no want to see it. It's one of the few animated movies still that. You know, is great. It's funny, like The Incredibles, but it might even get you in the heart. You know, make you get a little misty eyed. It's a good film, and then so Brad Bird, good guy, good filmmaker, and then he did The Incredibles for Pixar, which was great. I actually that was the first Pixar film you saw willingly, right?
What?
The Incredibles.
Yeah.
Sometimes
I saw Cars.
Yeah, and then yeah, that was good. Well, the other thing is too is that okay, your history with Pixar is like you don't. Well, actually, let me get this straight too. Almost all movies that I usually want to see, either Dad says I don't want to watch them, and that really is code for I do want to watch them, or he just really has no want to see it. I have many times tried to put in Finding Nemo, Monsters Incorporated. One time I lured you up to when I used to have the mini apartment upstairs. There I used to have a couch and everything laid out, and I was like, hey, I'll buy you pizza if you come up here. I had Toy Story 2, and I just remember after the pizza was gone, you left.
That was enough.
So he's not really been a huge fan of Pixar, but after The Incredibles, he saw Cars, and I don't think you really wanted to see Ratatouille, did you, really?
Not really.
Did you end up liking the movie, though?
I'm leaving something out. We'll just talk some more about it, but it was an okay movie.
Yeah, I mean...
I guess I don't want to leave it out. I just want to... With the Toy Story, you knew the voices. You knew they were... So these characters were on the screen. After the end of the movie, I did not know a single person that I did not try to find out who the single person was or figure out who was speaking as the characters on the screen. To me, I was watching the movie or the story.
You were watching the movie to watch the movie, not the story.
And I said, oh, yeah. Well, that's him, and that's him, and that's him. And I'm going, so then I was looking at the credits in the movie, and I was going, well, Peter O'Toole.
That's like the only recognized.
That was the only one I sort of recognized.
Yeah.
But, like, of course.
Jean Garofalo played the French chick.
They were going by so fast, I couldn't read all the names. But the point of it is, to me, none of them were really that familiar other than O'Toole. Mm-hmm. He said Brian Dennehy was one of the characters, which was he's a good character actor. And that's cool. I mean, to me, that's when you're doing verbiage. It's just like when I know I'm crossing lines here, but what's that movie? Having a brain lock here.
Who's in it?
Belle and the guy that played
Beast?
Beauty and the Beast. I didn't know that.
We didn't know that was
Robbie Benson. And that's a good thing. I'm sure they enhanced the voice a little bit, but the point of it is, you still didn't know it was him.
Yeah.
You didn't look at it and say, well, that's Robbie Benson playing a part.
Or Robin Williams playing the genie. Like you knew, like you could tell that was.
You
final.
Could tell that was Robin. I could.
Well, oh no, saying, yeah.
But the point of it is, he just moved so fast, and you know, in different cases, that's the thing. And with that movie, I did not get caught up in
Did that hurt the film for you,
no,
or did it make it better?
Makes it better. Because now you're not identifying what brought him to doing this movie. You were listening to the story.
Story, right. Well, that's Brad...
And that's what
Pixar...
If you're going to do an animated...
Animated movie.
Animated movie. That's what the movie's supposed to do is make you listen, watch the story and listen to it.
And it's also supposed to allow you to do things that you wouldn't be able to normally do in like a live action film. And
stop
tweaking the chair. I can hear it.
Tweaking the chair.
I have headphones on so we can listen to the audio. So I can hear the audio and I just hear.
Sorry about that.
It's okay. We'll edit that out. Not really. We won't. We'll keep it in.
Keep the background in.
But no, I actually loved the film. I mean, it wasn't exactly what I was expecting it to be. I don't know why I thought it was something. But the thing is that even with my high expectations, it didn't falter what I thought that the film would be. Like, being it's a Disney Pixar film, I thought, well, yeah, super mega happy ending. But there was one point at the end of the film where it took a right turn where it did something I was sort of expecting it to do, but then it didn't come back around full circle, which is, you know, I don't want to really ruin the movie too much, but you'd figure that if the father and the brother are unimproving of the lead character, that at the end of the movie, if the character is pressed, they will help him in his final, in the climactic battle or whatever the movement of the film is. In this case, it is trying to impress cook food for a food critic. And instead of not only the brother and father helping out, the whole nest of rats help. But I was thinking that it would be the brother, the father, and the cooks that left would realize, oh, anyone can cook, and would come back. And only the girl came back. And I figured the girl would, but I really expected the rest, like, they would, you know, they would come back, and they didn't. So that's the part that sort of went, whew, you know, I really didn't, because I thought to have the happy ending, you can't have the rats work in the kitchen, because if that health is, because the health inspector will come, and if he sees even one rat, whoa, place is closed. But
yeah, he saw more than one. Oh, yeah. we'll just tell you that much. Four,
that's actually one of the. Actually, I gotta say too is that out of all the Pixar films, the best climactic sequences that I've seen on the screen. I've seen all the Pixar films except for Toy Story on the big screen, and that was one of the best. And it's not because how it looked visually, but just the pacing and everything was just really. Like, I mean, The Incredible. I really do love The Incredibles, but the climactic finale was, you know, it was okay for me. I mean, it a superhero movie you always want to see on the big screen because it looks better, but I didn't. But I thought the other one is if you watch on the big screen is Monsters Incorporated. If you watch the Warehouse of Doors, it's beautiful, but it's that same kind of rush that you get watching something that exciting visually, but add the emotional, you know, presence of the film and the character, the journey of the characters, and you totally get wrapped up into it. And Brad Bird seems to really do that with the characters. He really seems to care. Like one of my favorite quotes about him from him about this movie was, "Computers like to make everything look all fresh, shiny, and new. Our hardest job was to make everything look old, like it's been around in Paris, like for as long as Paris has been around for, which has been a very long time." And there is one. There's if you go to iTunes, which is where you probably subscribed to this at. There's the 9-minute preview, and it's the shot where he's seen in trailers where he holds the mouse over the water. He's like, "I can't kill you. I'm crazy. I'm talking to a rat." That whole scene is it. You can see the bricks on the ground. It looks very old, very misty, very. It looks like freaking Paris, France, and like you would expect it to be at night, not glorified in a movie. So it was sort of. Nice. I mean, in the shots where they do glorify Paris, it is beautiful.
Yeah.
And I really totally dig how each different space they go into, the view from their apartment is more grander. Like, the dream is closer to being realized, which I don't know. The beauty of it, I guess, is what I don't know. That's what I took from that. I don't know. Brad Bird gives you some figurative, literal stuff sometimes. That's just me. You know, but yeah, very good movie. Check it out. I really dig it.
Just remember, rats can read.
Yeah. Remember, rats can read. So if
don't leave your books out.
Yeah, if you're evil and planning something, or you're trying to stop someone from taking over a business because they're a heir to the business, don't let their rat read it because
you'll be in a lot of trouble.
And he can run faster than you probably, even though you look like Gollum. I'm sorry, the guy. The one head chef looks like Gollum from Lord of the Rings to me.
Well,
I know you point out that he looked like who? Oh,
the guy that played Ross or plays the Detective Poirot.
We didn't say Detective Poirot there earlier. Like when you were like that reminded me of Poirot. I was like Ross Poirot. He's like no. Detective Poirot. I was like, is that from Clouseau or something? He's like, no, it's.
I might be pronouncing his name wrong. So
no. You're probably right. Wasn't Alan
French?
Alan Arkin played him, right? Or no, somebody else played him, but Alan Arkin was in the movie.
Right? You were talking about the in-laws. He played the bad guy in In-Laws.
Yeah, okay.
Also the bad guy in
Harry and the Hendersons.
In Executive Decision, and he was the French tracker in Harry and the Hendersons.
Yeah, okay.
That's who he looked like. But it wasn't his voice. I'm almost.
Oh no! It was Ian Holm.
Ian Holm
is the guy. For those Lord of the Rings fans out there, he played Bilbo Baggins, the Hobbit who had the ring originally and then gave it to Frodo. And then we see him at sort of at the end of the first movie, and then the very end of the story. Ian Holm's actually been around for a very long time. It's just that Lord of the Rings, he finally got. Oh look, it's sort of Ian Holm. He did Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
That's how everyone knows him now, which is sort of sad. He's a good actor. Anyway. But yeah, Ratatouille, I give it a 5-star or like 10 out of 10. But that's me. You liked Cars a lot better, didn't you? But you also said it was it's a completely different film, though, too.
To me, you know, between the two, I'd rather watch this one again than the Cars. Cars was good, and I would watch it again, but it's different storylines.
Oh, yeah.
He thinks he's the best when he's not.
Yeah.
Where this rat learns to be the best.
Well, he accepts what he is.
And he accepts what the whole is. And, you know, and he's starting to believe his family at one point, but then he realizes he needs to be who he is instead of...
Right.
Of, which is what we all should strive...
Right, be yourself.
Be yourself.
So if it means that you
should aspire to be that.
Well, you should aspire to be something that you really want to be, or aspire to what you really are. Which means if you want to act like you're a human and cook, but you also want to somewhat be a rat because you are a rat, in the case of the movie, then, you know, that's what you would need to do. I think we've gone on long enough. I could really just keep going on how about how awesome Ratatouille is. The only thing I'm worried about, and this I guess you could sort of put this under news, is that Ratatouille was not a film that was supposed to be made under Disney, because during the whole Disney merger thing, they needed to shop around a movie that would really knock the socks off of like people who would invest in Pixar, like DreamWorks or Universal or whatever. And so this movie wasn't supposed to be made by Disney. But then Disney bought out Pixar. And that's why, for somebody who's out there who watched the film is not a slapsticky film. The film has a lot of adult humor, a lot more suggestive than the normal animated fare, you know. I think. I mean, would you agree?
Yeah, but it...
I mean, the kids are not going to get... The kids are not going to get it. The kids are not going to get that stuff. I mean, the adults will. Like, I was rolling in laughter when they talked about... I like you to meet, or my inspiration is My Little Chef, and the way he describes it, though, you know, you can take that as a possible very small penis joke, but
I never took it that way. I totally.
Well, he's talking to a girl, and the girl looks down at looks off camera, and then looks up where he's like doing the minuscule.
But he's sitting there trying to politely tell that he's got a rat showing him how to cook.
Right, and he's like, "Well, I have a little chef."
I was into the story as I never took it the wrong way. In other words, so the adult will, but a child won't. They're going, "Well, he's got that little rat, and now he's going to tell."
That's true,
and that's what the little kid's going to. That's what the little kid's going to think.
But see, that's good, though. That's good.
I see what Nick's talking about. I never looked at
that. And also, the whole joke...
That is a dog, by the way.
And the whole joke is, too, is that, you know, he has to put the rat somewhere. So he opens up his pants. He's like, you know, I'm really sorry. And the rat looks down. He's like, I'm not going where your balls are. You know, that's technically the gist of it. He's like, I'm not going down there. Are you nuts? I don't want to go down in your undergarment area. I mean, but, yeah, so, anyway... I've rambled on way too much about Ratatouille, and so good movie. Really check it out. I want to watch it again. So
if you have Ryan?
Yeah, I'll dude. Go. Oh hell yeah, dude! I love Ratatouille. But you know what? Actually, I made him a promise that if I took him to see Ratatouille, or if he saw Ratatouille with me, I would see 1408. So you might hear a 1408 review coming up out of me. We need to see it soon because Transformers is coming out.
And if you don't want me to come back on again, write me at ogdog@aol.com.
And also, carve and copy that to goodbadgeeky@gmail.com. We'll read your email and distaste for him over the air. And which, out of all the amazing emails we've gone, all the real ones, amazingly one, I really doubt that's going to happen. Show my dad some love, though. He deserves it. Goodbadgeeky@gmail.com. Next show... If Jimmy does come back, we will talk about the ever-changing landscape of television. We've been promoting that for the last three episodes we've done. We've not done it yet because me and Jimmy don't have the time to really do the show together. So hopefully we will. But thanks again for coming on, sir. It was always pleasure getting in-depth with the movies with you. And we might have you back.
I'm respected from the older clan.
Well, hey, that's... You know what? That's sometimes good because all amidst of the whole, Jimmy's gay joke and whatever else we offer up here on this fine program, it's nice to get a little seasoned taste of...
whole seasoned.
Would you prefer me to say old and wretched?
Yeah, I'd say old. Older.
The older generation. So, thanks for listening, and you guys have a great 4th of July weekend. And Transformers comes out next week. Enjoy.
Get out of here with that cheese! You're a creep! Go away! We're having a good time until you start a cheapers! Go have some coffee with cream or something, because I'll tell you something. This is a happy place.